It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Sloppy, wet old day in the city, Your Worship.
Yeah. Looking out the window there, and you can barely see North Head, and you certainly can't see Rangitoto. So, not the best of days. But spring is coming.
I bet you've got a good office. I just never thought about your office before. I bet it's a beauty.
It's great because I look out over the Waitemata Harbour and look out over Auckland. And when I get really hacked off with, you know, all of these problems arriving on my desk, I look out the window and I say, hey, that's what it's all about. This is a fantastic city. It's a beautiful city. We're lucky to live here. So let's deal with the problems. Let's tackle the challenges and let's make it a great place to live. So it's a constant inspiration to me, Mikey.
That's the spirit. Ladies and gentlemen, Phil Goff, the Mayor of Auckland's on the line with me. Good morning, Phil. I said to have an exchange pleasantries with you.
Yeah. Well, we said it was an appalling morning, but yep. Good morning on an appalling morning.
How's it?
It's not as bad as Houston, apparently. So.
Oh, man. Wow, that's insane, isn't it, over there?
Yeah. That's, just listening to some woman saying, you know, we've got 7 feet of water in our home, and it's they've had, what, 25
inches? That's a person and a half.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. How big the person is, but... Yeah, your heart goes out for the people there. That, you know, there's nothing worse than a flood in many regards because of just of the appalling damage that it does and the clean up and the there'll be thousands and thousands of people rendered homeless. So let's hope they handle it better than Katrina a decade ago.
I'm interested to see what the old Mr. Trump, how he behaves down there. That's, I think it's going to be a little bit out of his depth, to be honest. But anyway, it's like all the disaster, like we talked about after the building fire in London as well. You must look at it as a mayor of a major metropolitan city, and you must take notes, I guess, of how to. Of what to keep an eye on and what things to attend to and what things, you know, that other maybe that they're missing or the things that they've done right, you know? Sort of.
Certainly the Grenfell Towers was just an appalling tragedy, but we'd had earlier warning of it and the fire that took place in the high-rise in Melbourne and also in Dubai. And I saw the other day, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I guess, another fire in Dubai where the fire didn't appear to be inside the building as much as running out the facade on the outside of the building. So what happened back in January of this year, they changed the building code and the requirements for standards for the veneer not to be highly combustible. In fact, looking out the window here, they've just replaced the granite with an aluminium cladding on the building that I'm in, but it is not the highly combustible cladding. It meets all of the requirements. But, you know, when you see a tragedy like, you just wonder how the hell it happened in London, that it could have been so poorly set up for fire resistance, no sprinklers, a combustible cladding, and a set of rules that said to people, if there's a fire, stay inside your room.
That's no good, eh?
That killed scores of people. So, yeah, we have our people have been out since before the Grenfell Towers fire, surveying the cladding on buildings, making sure that it's up to standard. We've found a few that none that look like Grenfell Towers, but some that do have that aluminium cladding that is combustible. So they're working right across the city now, inspecting all buildings to make sure that the fire code and the standards are being met.
The Henderson Film Studios, speaking of buildings and standards being met, are being run down, and the insurance money from the recent fire there has been absorbed by the council, but you're not fixing them up. What's happening there? What's the story? What's the future for the Henderson Film Studios, which I thought were going to be a great big money spinner for the city?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been a huge money spinner, but they've been good at it and all credit to people like Bob Harvey that set it up originally to make sure that this city could be a city that attracts big films and with all of the job opportunities that go with that. But the land where the film studios are in Henderson is now land that will be part of the Henderson renewal and regeneration. And the focus of ATED, Auckland Tourism Events and Economic Development, is pretty much on the new QMU studios, where there's a lot of work going on. I went up there earlier this year and you know, huge opportunities, not just for the people who are acting, but the people making the costumes, the people making the sets, the little businesses all over town that do the high value and high cost work to enable these films to be done. And there's also some private sector interest in setting up studios in Auckland that might attract, you know, some of the big Hollywood theatre, Hollywood studios over here to film in New Zealand.
But isn't that what those the original ones that burnt down were?
They did their job in their time, and now we're looking at. Out of Kumu, they've got I think one of the biggest tanks in the southern hemisphere for filming underwater scenes. So,
did the insurance from the Henderson fire go to building the Kumu ones?
No. That is money that is available for the investment. We'll continue to use the Henderson site until such time as the urban renewal in Henderson requires us to develop that land for alternative purposes. But the focus of ATEED activities is currently on the Kumu studios. I mean, we don't care where it happens, as long as we can do what it makes economic sense to do to attract movies to this country that have a spin-off for jobs, for economic development, and promoting the branding of Auckland.
So the Kumu studios, what is the council's involvement in that? Like how much do you contribute money towards it?
It's privately owned, but we contribute money towards the promotion of New Zealand as a place where these movies are screened. And they do a business case on it so that for every dollar that you invest, you want to get, you know, $10 back or whatever the sum may be. Because you're using ratepayers' money, there's got to be a good business case that shows that there is a return for Auckland and Aucklanders from attracting the business here. I mean, ATEED does it not just for the film industry, but right across the board, a whole lot of different things that, you know, we want this to be a high-tech, high-value-add city, and ATEED's role is council's arm to promote that future for the city.
Right. And it's been a big week this week for the roadways out by the airport. It's finally opening a part of the road there, but no one understands how to use it.
Yeah, Kirkbride Road, the underpass. It's been a long time coming. It's part of the solution. It's not the whole solution.
I spoke to someone out there yesterday who was working, continuing on the works alongside it, and said that it was nose to tail all day long.
Yeah. I haven't had an update on how the thing it opened for the first time yesterday, so they may be having teething problems. But
what's it supposed to do? That piece of roadway.
It's supposed to allow the motorway to go all the way down George Bolt Drive without having to stop for traffic lights on whatever the road it is. Massey Road is it that it's crossing over?
That's the road that swings into the industrial area.
Yeah. So you know, you get off the motorway, and suddenly there's a long queue there because there's a set of traffic lights because you've got an intersection. Well, that intersection has now been replaced with an underpass, and that should enable a freer flow as long as the traffic is continuing to flow, obviously, on the other side on George Bolt Drive. But if you've got congestion on George Bolt Drive, it's only a very partial answer. So
yeah, you don't want people that have just arrived in New Zealand to spend the first hour that they're here looking up the back end of another car. You know?
No, and what we've got to do, a number of things. First of all, we want to put a shoulder on the motorway on what's called State Highway 20B, which goes out to Puanui and Papatoetoe, so that you've got a rapid transit from the airport to heavy rail at Puanui. And then we want to have, I want a light rail from the town to the airport. Government says, yeah, but we want you to look at a busway first. And we're looking at both different proposals. If the busway is only going to be there for a couple of years before it's replaced by light rail, you might want to do it all at once. But one way or the other, you want mass transit from the CBD to the airport so that, you know, people don't spend, you know, I've spent a 3 hours flying from Australia and then spent an hour and a half getting from the airport into the city, and and that's a terrible look for the city, but it's also terrible for the New Zealanders that are going to the airport, trying to get to the airport on time. They've got a deadline, the flight leaves at a particular time, for the air crews, for the people at work in the precinct, because the airport precinct is one of the fastest growing areas in New Zealand. So we've got to have better traffic solutions, and we're working on those right now.
You're doing all my segues for me this morning, Phil. I've got a question here from a listener. My mum asks, why bother opening and expanding on the bus stations on the North Shore if you're not going to do any put any more car parks out there for people to park and ride?
I've been talking to Auckland Transport about that. They've got plans in place to expand the car parks, but it can't just be single level car parks because there isn't enough room for single level car parks. You're probably going to have to look at car park buildings. I think we are under subscribed for car parks for the park and ride. If people have to...
You don't need to think about that. That's the case here.
If you get to the car park and you can't find a car park, you say, well, to hell with this. I'll drive back into town. Yeah.
So, on the footpath.
I mean, the other thing is to have feeder routes that work better than they are at the moment. And
but what's so hard about putting more car parks in some of those around some of those bus stations?
It's pretty expensive to build a car park building when you've got to go down or up in the air. It's easy enough to asphalt an area and have a single level car park, but we don't have the room for single level car parks anymore. Mm. These are often in areas that are pretty intensively used. But I've talked to AT and said, look, we want more people on our train. Hey, I've got to advertise this. Just give me 1 second to do this. Probably tomorrow we hit the 20 millionth passenger to travel on our heavy rail a year. 20 million. Yeah. Spontaneous applause. I like that.
Yeah. We had a group here that are ready to do that. So will you be like on board the train and giving them a gift basket or like a farmer's card or something?
Yeah, we're having a look at doing something tomorrow. I don't want to break all the news now. I mean, I've given you an exclusive already. We've lifted from 10 million passenger trips a year 6 years ago to 20 million now, and a few years before that it was about 3 million. So we're getting more and more people using heavy rail, which is good, because when you're on heavy rail, you're off the roads altogether, and that's a good thing for Auckland. But, you know, set against that, when you're growing, I've just got the latest figures in for growth of Auckland, we're just about hitting 50,000 extra residents in the last year. And when you're getting that and you're getting another...
Sorry, did you say 50,000 homeless residents?
No, yeah, well, sadly for some of them. Look at the front page of the print media today, and you see that there are 30,000 kids being hospitalised each year because they're living in damp, unhealthy homes, and 20 kids dying.
If you're like me, Phil, you're getting a little bit sick of landlords defending that too.
Yeah, and look, you need a warrant of fitness for houses. You and I can't drive our cars without a warrant of fitness because it would be unsafe. Well, it's equally unsafe to have kids growing up in houses where they're going to get pneumonia, they're going to get bronchitis, they're going to get asthma, and, you know, 20 kids a year dying from a preventable cause. You know, that is appalling. And what we need to be asking all of our political parties is put up your policy for a warrant of fitness on houses, because it's not fair on those kids who happen to be born into low-income families to have their life stunted and to have their life sometimes ended because they're not living in decent conditions. We're better than that.
Phil Goff, thank you very much. Speak to you again this time next week.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. Cheers, mate.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.